And now, the Connecticut Business Blend with the Hartford Business Journal on WTIC News Talk 1080.
Greg Bordinaro joining us here, as he does on Mondays at 8:50. Greg, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Brian.
Listen, there's been a lot of different companies that don't normally wade into politics that have made donations to the president-elect's inauguration fund. I mean, I read this morning he's collected some $200 million. Stanley Black & Decker is one that's notable in Connecticut. My first question is that without precedent? Have they ever done something like this before?
So apparently back in Trump's first term, they gave $25,000 to his inauguration. That kind of went under the radar at the time. Obviously, there's a lot more attention being paid to it this time around during President-elect Trump's second term. This particular donation was sizable. You know, $1 million is a pretty big number. A lot of CEOs have been meeting with Trump, trying to, you know, sort of kiss the ring, as they say, since he'll be in charge in just a couple of weeks. But this number was a big one. And, you know, it comes as Stanley Black & Decker is worried about Trump's potential tariffs, particularly on Chinese goods. He's floated the idea of 60% tariff on Chinese goods. Stanley has a lot of manufacturing in China. And they warn that that'll cost them like $200 million. A year with just that tariff, and so they're already considering raising prices and relocating some manufacturing. So this is the politics. This is how politics works these days. You try to influence politicians any way as possible, and the Trump inauguration is one way that a lot of companies are doing it. Actually, Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple, personally gave $1 million just a few days ago to Trump's inauguration when Apple itself is not giving. So it's interesting times. But, this is sort of normal. Companies do give to inaugurations. But obviously, there's a lot more tension given that Trump's going to be in his second term here.
I mean, I'm not even sure if you have an answer for this. But, like, is that so it registers with Trump that they're supportive, so when the rubber meets the road, he might be a little more thoughtful about it? Or, like, what's the benefit?
I assume that's what the strategy is. It's kind of like lobbying, except it's almost a gift form of lobbying, if you will. And this is definitely to say, hey, you know, we want to support you in ways that we can. Interestingly, Stanley Black & Decker, and this is what the Wall Street Journal reported, they also took down a press release that they posted on their website on the January 6, 2020, when the Capitol was sort of raided that day. Their former CEO put out a press release that day saying, we support democracy and a smooth transition of power. They removed that press release along with making this donation. So interesting times. And that was the Wall Street Journal reported that. We're in interesting times here in terms of how big public companies are handling the next president.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of ring kissing all over the world, it seems. We're talking with Greg Bordinaro from the Hartford Business Journal and the Connecticut Business Blend, which is every Monday at 8:50 here on WTIC News Talk 1080. Okay, so the biggest office tower in Hartford is late on a payment. I mean, tell me about what's going on there.
Yeah, so, City Place One, if you're driving, to or through Hartford, it's hard to miss it. It's the largest building in the Hartford skyline, which, for a small city, Hartford does have a nice little skyline. The City Place One, which had United Healthcare at the top of it for many years, is the biggest building. It's 38 stories, almost 900,000 square feet. It's missed a few loan payments now. The property is basically, it's about 50% occupied, which is never good for a big office building, that type of low occupancy. It was recently had a new valuation put on about $64 million. And the company that owns it right now is a Boston real estate firm. They bought it for $113.2 million in 2015. And they still have a $79.3 million loan on it. So the property is very much underwater. In most cases, and their loan was securitized and basically sold to investors. And I won't get too deep into what that means, but it makes it more complicated to work out a foreclosure proceeding. But lenders and banks in general right now are more reluctant to foreclose on particularly an office building because, if they foreclose on it, they own it. And frankly, there's a lot of office buildings underwater right now. So it'll be interesting to see. They're trying to work out some sort of agreement with the lenders right now. So it'll be interesting to see if it does eventually go through foreclosure or they take some sort of haircut, but a foreclosure is not automatic these days. It maybe was even 5-10 years ago, because, you know, banks and lenders are wary about owning a whole lot of empty office buildings. And so, you know, cause they don't want to be in that business, and they don't really know what they're going to be able to do with those properties.
Well, do you know the name of the company in Boston? Is it one of the big players in commercial real estate, or?
It's a real estate investment firm. It's not one of the bigger players. It does have a pretty big portfolio.
So they have the money. They're just choosing not to pay it, correct?
Yeah, most likely that's it. I mean, I don't know their finances. It's a privately held real estate investment firm, so I don't know what their finances are. But most likely they could pay it off. But, you know, when a building is so underwater, meaning, you know, the value of the building is, you know, far below what the outstanding loan is, a lot of commercial real estate, firms will stop paying loans and to try to get the lender to negotiate a new deal on the loan. Or sometimes they'll just give away the keys, saying, you know what, this property is not worth paying monthly mortgage payments anymore because it's so underwater, and we're never going to get the value back on this building.
Greg Bordenaro from the Hartford Business Journal joining us here on the Connecticut Business Blend. They're starting to value athletic programs and colleges like professional sports teams, as they kind of should, because that's basically how they're acting, you know, between obviously the schools that have massive football programs and basketball programs are probably worth the most. But UConn did make the list, right? Where are they?
Yeah, which was actually pretty good news. UConn was ranked 71st out of basically all the major college sports programs. And the CNBC basically valued them at $178 million, their entire sports program, including football, basketball, and even other sports. And it says that UConn basically makes $93 million in revenue. Now, compared to the big boys, football dominates college sports. So, you know, all the big football programs, they're the ones who top these lists. Ohio State's number one. They're valued at $1.3 billion. University of Texas, $1.28 billion. Texas A&M, number three, at $1.26. And then University of Michigan, about $1 billion. What's driving those valuations and their revenues is their TV contracts. You know, they've got multi-billion-dollar TV contracts. That's what separates these big football programs. And actually, UConn is the only Big East school on the top 75, which is interesting and also not surprising, since most of the Big East teams don't even have football programs.
Right.
UConn's the exception. You know, in football, they're an independent, which is part of their problem in terms of generating that needed revenue. I think there's a where UConn falls in this list in, say, 5 or 10 years, I think there's a big question mark, because there are still decisions that need to be made in terms of, you know, what conference they still want to be in long term. I think you're still going to see a lot of changes in college sports in terms of conferences and even more realignment. And, you know, so far UConn has kind of been on the outside looking in terms of that conference realignment. At the same time, you know, their basketball program is the most successful basketball program probably over the last 25 years. So there's that interesting sort of dichotomy. But at the end of the day, it's football that pays the bills.
You know, I'm curious, do you think that there's a day where universities might outsource the full management, or even like sell shares in their athletic department? Like, could like private equity get involved in college athletic ownership?
Yeah, I think all that is possible. You know, some colleges are already hiring general managers. There was a top ESPN basketball writer who actually retired as a writer, and he went to go be a general manager of a college sports program.
Woj.
And so, you know, so you're seeing a lot of that. So, yeah, I mean, college sports, especially college football, is becoming professionalized. And I think there's still a lot of question where this puts UConn at the end. So far, I'd argue, you know, while we've had success in the basketball program, UConn's kind of been hurt by all this realignment. But, you know, there's still opportunity left, because I do think there'll be more moving parts in terms of conferences and things like that.
Yeah. I mean, listen, they would need to get in a football conference that has a TV deal, but they don't want the basketball to leave the Big East. So, and these conferences don't want UConn just for football because they don't bring it to the table. So, I mean, they're in a tough spot. It's a really, really tough spot. All right, Greg, Happy New Year. Thanks for the info. It's good stuff.
All right. Thanks, Brian.
Greg Bordenaro from the Hartford Business Journal and Connecticut Business Blend.